Dronam sa madhusudana ishubhi pradiyotsyami pujarhav adhisudana. Arjuna said, O killer of enemies, O killer of Madhu, how can I counteract with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona, who are worthy of my worship? Support by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Respectable superiors like Bhishma, the grandfather of Dronacharya, the teacher, are always worshipable. Even if they attack, they should not be counterattacked. It is general etiquette that superiors are not to be offered even a verbal fight. Even if they are sometimes harsh in behavior, they should not be harshly treated. Then how is it possible for Arjuna to counterattack them? Would Krishna ever attack his own grandfather Ugrasena or his teacher Sandipani Muni? These were some of the arguments offered by Arjuna to Krishna. It would be better to live in this world by begging than to live at the cost of the lives of great souls who are my teachers. Even though desiring worldly gain, they are superiors. If they are killed, everything we enjoy will be tainted with blood. Nor do we know which is better, conquering them or being conquered by them. If we kill the sons of Dhritarashtra, we should not care to live. Yet they are now standing before us on the battlefield. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of miserly weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. In this world of dualities, there is always a great conflict that can be taking place within our minds. Because the nature of the mind is sometimes to accept and sometimes to reject. The nature of the mind is to be influenced by the three modes of material nature and the various dualities that are created by those three modes of nature. And thus there is great indecision. But we should know that we have responsibility for everything we do and everything we say. So we must be very thoughtful, and we must always seek guidance to make sure that what we are doing is the right thing. Because even good intentions, if they are not the right thing to do, we have to suffer the reaction. This is the nature of the laws of karma. Arjuna was in a great dilemma. He did not know what to do. Because the idea of fighting appeared to be so unpalatable to him. He decided in his own mind to take to a life of peace, of nonviolence, thinking that this would be the highest service to the Lord. But Lord Krishna told him that for a just cause we must fight. In order to not have our life defeated by illusion, we must fight. This is not a nonviolent world. This is a world where you have to fight, and if you do not, you will be defeated. And in that defeat, you will lose all of your virtues. There's a beautiful story of the life of Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami, the son of Ballabha, was the nephew of Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. And from his earliest childhood, he had such natural devotion to Lord Krishna. In fact, it is described when he was a very, very young child, hardly more than a baby, his father and his uncles were living in the kingdom of Binawab Hussain Shah. They were his high ministers, and they had tremendous wealth. They were great devotees of Krishna, but out of social pressure, they were literally forced to take the occupation of the ministers of a very cruel-hearted and deceitful king. When Lord Chaitanya came to Ramakeli en route to Vrindavan, Rupa Sanatan and Sri Ballabha, their names were then Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik, they came secretly at night to meet the Lord. And they first met Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Sri Haridas Thakur, who brought them to the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And although Dabir Kas and Sakar Malik and Sri Ballabha were very, very, very great scholars, they had mastered the scriptures. They had such pure devotion to Krishna. Even when they were little children, they would always play games about Krishna. And they were always praying to Krishna to deliver them so that they could engage wholeheartedly in his service for the betterment of mankind. When they came before Lord Chaitanya, they bowed down with prostrated obeisances, tears flowing from their eyes. They were so humble that Lord Chaitanya himself had to pick them up with his own arms. And they began to offer beautiful prayers, explaining that they were the most fallen, the most undeserving of his mercy, more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. But yet, they only had one hope, and that was that he would be merciful to them. And he was Patita Pavana. He had come to deliver the most fallen. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted them as his servant, as his servants. And he embraced them, gave them the names Rupa, Sanatan, and Anupam. And little Jiva, who was a tiny child from a not too distant place, was watching this whole wonderful exchange and listening to this conversation. And by seeing the humility of his father and uncles in surrendering to God, And by seeing Lord Chaitanya's beauty and mercy, his entire life was completely transformed in pure unalloyed devotion. This is a great lesson, the greatest lesson to parents of children, whatever age they may be. Just see the effect of the exposure that the parents reveal before their children. Parents are so much looked up to by the child. When a child is a baby, they do not know what is God. They see their parents like God. You have created me, you are maintaining me, and if you do not maintain me, you will destroy me. So the parents are Brahma, Vishnu, Maheshwar for the child. The parent wants to get angry, the child thinks he will destroy me. The parent is pleased, oh, mother will maintain me. So how much the child is influenced. And when the child sees the parents sincerely surrendering their lives at the lotus feet of the Lord, there will be nothing that will have a greater, more beneficial impression in their lives. But children's hearts can understand what is reality. Their intelligence is not working so properly. But in one sense, this is good, because with our intellectual conceptualization of everything we see, we are sometimes right and sometimes wrong. But children, their hearts are simply open to absorb and receive without the filtration of the intelligence. And if we give them the right thing, they receive it. So Jiva understood how sincerely his father and his uncle, they were weeping, they were crying. They were presenting themselves as so fallen and so lowly. And they totally surrendered themselves in such helpless dependence at the lotus feet of the Lord. And the Lord accepted them. At that very moment, he surrendered his life at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you wish to take the responsibility of having children, or if you have already taken the responsibility of having children, my humble request is you should be a parent like Sri Ballabha and show real love to your child, not the bogus love of this material world. The love of this world is the love of animals. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. The bird, mother and father bird brings, the mother bird sits on their eggs, and the father bird comes and brings worms to feed them when they are born. Simply to have a nest, and to have food, and to create a person's education so that they could in turn have a nest and food, and feed their little children and have a nest and food for them. This is not love. This is ignorance. And human civilization is deteriorating to such a degree, especially in India, where people are coming to this great illusion that material prosperity is a sign of advancement. That living like big animals is a great thing. But it is an unfortunate thing. The parents' only real duty is to behave in such a way, by being such perfect surrendered devotees of the Lord, that their children want nothing else in life. That is love. And one can perform all one's worldly responsibilities. They are also there, but they are not very important because they come and they go. You do what you have to do. You do your business. You take care of your house. You do it. It's your swadharma by material calculation. But it's not very important. Don't put your heart and soul into that nonsense. Put your heart and soul into the truth. Don't raise your children to think this is the aim of life. Simply eating, sleeping, mating, defending, and making all nice arrangements for that purpose. Let your children see what is love of God, what is surrender to the Supreme. Let them never have to suffer birth and death again. That is love. So Jiva Goswami, from that point on, he had such devotion to Krishna that he would make little deities of Krishna and Balaram. And all day long he would just serve those deities while all of his other friends were playing all sorts of games. He would be picking flowers and offering. He would be presenting arti. He would be getting food and offering them. He would be dressing them and decorating them. And he would be singing for them and dancing for them and trying to induce his other friends to also come and perform seva with him. And how blissful he was. But then by divine arrangement, his father died on the banks of the Ganges. And after hearing this, he was thinking, what is the use of this material world? My uncles Rupa and Sanatan are in Vrindavan. I should be with them. So after some time he went to Navadvip, and Lord Nityananda Prabhu took him on a whole tour of Lord Chaitanya's abode, the holy dham. On November 4th, we will be going to Navadvip and we will be following basically the same route that Nityananda Prabhu took Jiva Goswami on. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given a very nice narration in this regard. And then he went to Varanasi. And when he was in Varanasi, under the instructions of Nityananda Prabhu, he studied under a very, very great scholar, Madhusudan Vidyachaspati. And he became the greatest scholar in all of Kashi. Although he was a young child, not even 20 years old, he was able to defeat in argument and logic even the greatest pundits of Varanasi and establish the highest truths. And then he went to Vrindavan. And when he went to Vrindavan, he surrendered at the lotus feet of his two uncles. And he asked Sanatan Goswami for initiation. But Srila Sanatan Goswami told him that you should accept Rupa Goswami as your Diksha Guru. This was the humility of Sanatan Goswami. So when he approached Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami wanted to train him properly. Although he was coming from such a high birth, Jiva Goswami, Saraswat Brahmin community, and although he was the greatest scholar of the day, and although he had such enthusiasm for service, Rupa Goswami wanted to teach him, and through him teach the whole world, that bhakti means humility. Without humility, whatever else you do, it has no sense of value in the heart of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he had him engaged in the most simple services. He would clean the rooms of Rupa Goswami and the other Vaishnavas. Simple cleaning. And sometimes he would collect water from them, pour them from Jamuna, and put them in pots and bring. And sometimes he would pick flowers for their puja. Other times he would cook for them. Other times he would massage their legs and massage their feet. Other times he would do research for them by looking up various slokas from different scriptures. Sometimes he would go out to the forest and get palm leaves, and he would prepare them to be the proper type of paper in which Rupa Goswami would do his writings. In this way, by cleaning and cooking and sometimes fanning his gurus, he spent many, many months doing nothing but this. But one day, very, very proud and very learned person, his name was Rupa Narayan. He was a great expert at debate. He came to Vrindavan. He had already traveled to all the provinces of India. And he defeated everyone in his argumentation. All useless argument. It would be based on scripture, but no conclusion. The only conclusion was to prove that he was the greatest scholar. But somehow, due to his past karma, he had such incredible intelligence. But unfortunately, his pride and ego excelled his intelligence. Because this is the tendency. When you have something very, very great materially, whether it be education or wealth or beauty or high birth, then we become very proud and we start thinking, I am very great. I am better than everyone else. And then if somebody starts to become almost as educated or wealthy or beautiful as ourselves, then we take them to be competitors. We want to defeat. So he defeated everyone, everywhere. And he had a certificate called the Jayapatra. And anyone he defeated, he made them sign. And he had so many signatures of all the scholars in India. But everywhere he'd go, he'd hear about this Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis in Vrindavan. They are the greatest. So after everywhere else, he came to Vrindavan and he approached Rupa and Sanatan and he said, I have heard you are very great scholars. I challenge you to debate. Rupa and Sanatan Goswami said, we are not concerned with having a debate with you. And he said, oh, such hypocrites you are. You present yourself to be such great scholars, then why will you not debate with me? You are afraid of losing. You are afraid of losing your reputation. If you are actually scholars, you will accept my debate. And Rupa and Sanatan, very humble, they were not the slightest bit disturbed. They said, actually, we are not fit to debate with you. We are not worthy. You are a great, great scholar. We are very simple people. Somehow, our well-wishers have made propaganda and created this illusion that we're great scholars and we're great souls, but we're nothing. You shouldn't waste your time with us. So Rupa Narayan was very happy to hear this. If this is what you really feel, then you sign, I have been defeated by Rupa Narayan. So Rupa and Sanatan immediately took their writing instruments and signed, yes, Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. He was very happy. But then what happened is he heard that Jiva Goswami, their nephew, although very young, he was only 20 years old, he had just come to Vrindavan. He was still acting as a very menial servant of Rupa and Sanatan. That he is becoming a very great scholar also. So he was thinking, I should defeat him. Because once I defeat him, then however great he becomes, I can show the world that I have defeated him. So he went to Jiva Goswami and challenged him to debate. And then he showed him the certificate that I have defeated your uncles, Rupa and Sanatan, and now I have come to defeat you. And when Jiva Goswami saw that Rupa and Sanatan, out of humility, signed it, and now he was blaspheming them and blaspheming the whole cult of bhakti, he was thinking, just to save the reputation of my uncles, Rupa and Sanatan Goswami, I must defeat this man. So he said, yes, I will debate with you. For 7 days they had a debate on the bank of the river Jamuna. And on the 7th day, Rupa Goswami completely destroyed all the arguments of Rupa Narayan, and this great Digvijay Pandit was defeated. And he was so much ashamed, so much embarrassed, so much humiliated by being defeated by such a young boy. He left Vrindavan, never to return again. So Jiva Goswami came back to Srila Rupa Goswami to tell him the good news. When Rupa Goswami heard this, what is this? You entered into a debate with this person? Why? You wanted to defeat him, and you have defeated him. Why are you so attached to your false pride? Why do you want to cause harm and defeat to others? Vrindavan is only a place for those who have no sense of false pride. It is a place for those who are most humble. This is the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, you should not live here any longer, because you have transgressed the principle of humility. And for your own prestige, you have entered into a useless, mundane debate with another. So Jiva Goswami had to leave Vrindavan. And he went to a place near Mathura. And there he lived in a very, very, very simple place. And he was fasting. And he became very ill. He was practically eating nothing. He was just weeping and crying day and night, chanting the holy names of the Lord due to the thought that he had made this offense of being proud. After some time, Sanatana Goswami was traveling in that area. And he found poor Jiva in such a situation. And he came back to Rupa Goswami. And he said that you are not following one of the principles of Lord Chaitanya. And Rupa Goswami was so humble. He didn't say, what do you mean? Why you are saying this? He said, oh, which principle am I not following? Please tell me and help me to follow it. These devotees were so humble. So Sanatana Goswami said, you name the main teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and I will reveal to you which one you are not following. So he began to narrate all the different important teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and then he came to the teaching Jivadoi, kindness to jivas. And when he said this, Sanatan looked at him in such a way that Rupa Goswami understood that I am not being kind to Jiva. Jiva Goswami. So he called him back and embraced him. Now we should learn from this story so many wonderful things. One is, although Jiva Goswami was completely renounced, completely detached, and more humble than a blade of grass, to defend the dignity of the Vaishnav culture and to protect the dignity of his guru and another senior and his Shiksha Guru and Diksha Guru, he was willing to fight. He didn't care for his own prestige, but he was fighting as a service to the Lord. And that fight was necessary. It was essential. As Arjuna was willing to fight to protect Dharma, Jiva Goswami was also fighting to protect Dharma. Because if this rascal Rupa Narayan was going around the world saying that Rupa and Sanatan were defeated by me, who would read the teachings of Rupa and Sanatan? And therefore Dharma would be destroyed from the world. So he was doing it out of selfless devotion and compassion. But even though there was absolutely no fault of his own, Rupa Goswami wanted to show the world the greatness of Jiva Goswami. And how did he do so? By completely appearing to misunderstand his intentions, chastise him, and banish him from Vrindavan. Because if Jiva Goswami would have tried to explain, Guruji, you don't understand. You are saying like this, but you do not understand. I am better than you think I am. Most disciples are like this. Anyways. I am also like this. We are always thinking of defending ourselves. We are always, our ego is very much on guard at all times. And even on guard against our guru. And the guru's position is to destroy the ego, the false ego, and purify it and make it real. So Jiva Goswami, his intentions were perfect. What he did was perfect. Everything was perfect. And Rupa Goswami chastised him and completely misunderstood him externally and said, what you did was nonsense, you did it out of false ego, and you broke the principles of Dharma. And Jiva Goswami humbled himself and say, Guru Maharaj, you are correct. I am sorry. And he didn't just say it, but he felt it. He was so humble. He felt that what he did was completely wrong. Because if Guru Maharaj says, it must be. If he is saying it to humble me, then how humble I should be. How more humble I should become. Whatever he's saying is for my good. So he began to fast and perform such severe austerities that his body was on the verge of death to atone for his offense, although he made no offense. This is a very inconceivable thing. But spiritual life is a very inconceivable thing. The heart of a Vaishnav is something wonderful. So in this way, Rupa Goswami wanted to show the whole world for all time what kind of person Jiva Goswami is. The greatest, the most humble, the most submissive, the most fearless. But at the same time, we must understand that our activities must always be very carefully and thoughtfully considered with the guidance of superior Vaishnavas. Because in this Kali Yuga, Maya is always trying to trap us. She's always trying to put us in predicaments and situations where we do something wrong, and then we have to pay the reaction. There are many examples to warn us of this, of acting without guidance and thoughtfulness. Srila Prabhupada was very, very, very strong that you must be Krishna conscious. You must be conscious of everything you're doing. You should never act out of lust. You should never act out of anger. You should never act out of pride. You should never act out of greed. You should never act out of envy or illusion. And you should never speak because you are induced by these feelings. Although these types of experiences are coming to us, we should never speak or act accordingly. We must use our intelligence. We must take proper guidance. Because as soon as you act, the reactions will come. There is a story, the famous book Panchatantra. A man's wife was going to have a baby. And he was praising how glorious and fortunate this son would be, although she was still pregnant. And she said, "You should be very careful and thoughtful about what you say and do." And the wife was very wise. So she told a series of stories. She said the story about a brahmachari. This brahmachari was out begging alms, and he had a pot of rice. And as he was carrying the rice, rather than thinking of Krishna, he let his mind wander. Don't let your mind wander, because this is what happens. So he was thinking, this is very nice rice. If I sell this rice, I can get a goat. And if I get a goat, then the goat will have babies. And then I will get two more little baby goats. Then I'll have three goats. And once I have three goats, then I can exchange it for one cow. And once I have a cow, then the cow will have calves. And once I have a cow and calves, then I'll get enough milk so that I can buy some land. And I can have nice paddy fields. And the old house that I'm now living in, I'll renovate it. And then when I have nice land and nice crops and a nice house, then I'll get married. Because what does a brahmachari need all these things for? Prabhupada said, if you, house means wife. If you have a house, you should have a wife in your house. You should not be a brahmachari with a house. Everyone agree? And then I'll have a house, and then I'll have a son. And he already thought the name of his son. My son will be named. And he said, and I'll go out, and I'll enjoy like anything, and my wife will take care of the cows, and my wife will take care of the son. But sometimes she's going to go to milk the cows and she's going to leave my son alone, and I'll come and I'll hit her with a stick. And then when he was thinking like that, he hit the stick against the pot of rice and it broke and fell to the ground. And then he had nothing. All his dreams broke with the rice. So after a few days after telling this story, the wife had a son, and he was a beautiful son. And the father was very, very happy. But the wife was telling him that you have to be very careful, very thoughtful in your life about what you do and how you do it. Do not act instinctively. So one day the wife went to take her bath in the river, and she said to her husband, "Can you take care of the child? He was just a baby." So the husband said, "Oh, I will be very happy to take care of the child, my beloved child." So he took the child, and the wife went to the river. As he was playing with the child so nicely, the messenger of the king came and said, "The king wants you to come to him immediately." So he was thinking, "Now what do I do? My wife is gone. It's either going to the king and leaving my son, or not going to the king. That's very dangerous." So he had a servant that was a pet mongoose. Does everyone know what is mongoose? What is Hindi for mongoose? Neela. My Hindi lesson for the day. So the mongoose was very dedicated servant. So the mongoose was taking nice care of the son. But then a big, big cobra came to attack the child. And when the mongoose saw the cobra coming, the mongoose, willing to risk its life, jumped and started fighting with the cobra to protect the poor innocent child. And after a long fight, somehow the mongoose killed the cobra. But in the process, his whole body was covered with blood. And then the husband came home, and right at the door, at the doorway, the mongoose came to greet him. And the husband saw that the mongoose was covered with blood. So he was immediately thinking that this mongoose has eaten my son. So he picked up a stick and beat the mongoose to death. And then he came inside and saw his son very happily playing. And next to the son was a dead cobra killed by the mongoose. So he realized, "I have made a big mistake." And then his wife came back and said, "You see, I told you, you should not act without thinking. This is the nature of this world. Maya is always trying to trap us. We must be very, very thoughtful." And then she told him another story. She said that one time there was a very poor Brahmin, and he had a dream. And the dream was that three beggars are going to come to you right at 12 o'clock noon tomorrow, and you should kill them. And if you kill them, each of the three of them will turn into treasure chests with great wealth. So he was thinking, "This is very nice." So in his house, a barber came to shave his head. And as his head was being shaved, right at 12 o'clock, three beggars came. So this Brahmin got up from his seat and immediately killed them. And all three turned into treasure chests. And so much wealth, gold and jewels and everything else. And he gave something to the barber. He said, "Very nice, you take this." So the barber was thinking, this is a very wonderful arrangement. When will three beggars come to my house? So he was just waiting for the day that three beggars would come to his house. And one day three beggars came to his house. So he picked up a stick and started beating them, and they ran away. And they went to the king and said, "This man's a crazy man. He beat us. We were just coming for alms. He beat us." So the king arrested this barber and had him killed. So the wife of this man told these stories to explain that we must be very, very conscientious of what we speak and what we say and what we do in this world. Because this is a world where we are always on a battlefield. There is always illusion and there is always truth. And if we pursue the path of truth, illusion is always going to try to take us away. And when we're on the path of illusion, there's always the struggle between the modes of ignorance, passion, and goodness. And we are always in being impelled to act in certain ways where we have to suffer so many terrible karmic reactions. And that is the cause of all suffering. Suffering is simply karmic reaction. For the non-devotees, for the devotees, suffering is purification to teach you to never engage in those activities again. Bhagavad Gita was spoken by Lord Krishna to Arjuna to give us the proper intelligence which should always be directing and guiding us of how to act, how to speak, and especially how to think in such a way that we will progress in life and we will never, ever, ever fall victim to the trappings of material energy. And that is why Srila Prabhupada, he cautioned us on so many occasions, "You must read my books very carefully and you must understand them. And you must discuss them amongst devotees." And of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed through Rupa Goswami all the world that of all activities, Vaishnava aparad is the most harmful for a devotee. Because the Lord's devotees are so dear to him. It is the nature of Krishna that he loves his devotees more than he loves his own life. It is his eternal ras to be subordinate to the service and the love of his devotees. And if you offend Krishna, there will be a reaction. But if you offend Krishna's devotees, there will be a greater reaction. Exactly when it comes and how it comes, that is by the will of the Lord. But it will come. So we must be very careful. And this is the responsibility of human form of life. It does not mean we should be fearful all the time. Devotees should be blissful, not fearful. But within that bliss should be that protection that we are afraid of making offenses. We are afraid of falling to sinful activities. And we must cultivate a strong intelligence by which we can discriminate between what is wrong and what is right. And that is why it is so essential that we hear we hear the truth from the lips of the Vaishnavas and from the scriptures every day. When we chant Krishna's holy names carefully every day and hear his words every day, that will give us the weapons by which we can fight the war every day. Because you have to fight every day. There is no question. Mahatma Gandhi, he was the great advocate of nonviolence, but his whole life was fighting wars. He wasn't against war, he was against nonviolence, because he declared war. He declared war against the British. He was constantly fighting against them. Maybe not by physically hurting them, but they would have been a lot happier if he physically hurt them. It would have pained them much less than the way he did it. Because he completely demoralized their ability to control this nation. So whether you're physically violent or nonviolent, depending on the particular need, Arjuna was told by Krishna, you fight with your Gandiva bow and you kill them. Because that was the need. And that is the duty of a Kshatriya. But the message to all of us, we don't have our Gandiva bows. We are not Kshatriyas like Arjuna. We are not in the military service, most of us. The war that Krishna is telling us to fight is the war against lust and anger and envy and greed and pride and illusion that is within our own hearts. And to help also fight that war to help others. And Krishna explains the greatest weapon to destroy ignorance is knowledge. And if you are armed with the weapon of knowledge, you will be undefeatable. Why? Because knowledge is to understand that we are completely dependent on Krishna, that we are completely controlled by Krishna, and that we must act in the service of Krishna. Sarva dharman purityajya mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papevyo mokshayishyami masucha. This is knowledge. To humbly accept Krishna as our Lord and act under His direction and be the servant of the servant of His servants. Krishna has given us in this age of Kali Yuga His holy name. If we take the name of Krishna, we will be undefeatable. All the power of Krishna is within His name. There is no greater weapon. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this world only 500 years ago. In his previous avatars, he killed the sources of ignorance in the form of the demons with his various weapons. As Varahadev, with his tusk, he pierced the body of Hiranyaksha. And he punched him, not even punched, he touched him with his hoof and pierced him with his tusk, and he was dead. Lord Narasingadev, his weapons was his nails. How wonderful. Guru Maharaj explains that these nails were harder than thunderbolts to Hiranyakashipu. But the same nails, they were like petals on the lotus of the hand of Narasingadev to Prahlad Maharaj. When Nrsingadev touched Prahlad on the head, it gave the ultimate ecstasy of transcendental love to Prahlad to feel the soft, gentle touch of the Lord. So this is the difference between one who approaches the Lord with enmity and one who approaches with humility and devotion. Both Hiranyakashipu and Prahlad were touched by the hand of the Lord. Yayatamam prapadyante tam sthathai bhagajamyaham mamavart manuvaratante manushya paratasaravashaha. Krishna explains in Gita, as you approach me, I reward you accordingly. Krishna reveals himself according to the nature of our consciousness. Some people, when they see the deity of the Lord, tears of love come into their eyes. And other people come and they see the deity and says, what is all this? Why they are doing like this? Why you are worshipping stone? Krishna is revealing himself according to our devotion. Hiranyakashipu hated Vishnu. Why did he hate Vishnu? Because he wanted to be the controller. He wanted to be the Lord. And everything's the property of Vishnu. So he was trying to compete with Vishnu. So the Lord came. Oh, you want to compete with me? And he tore him apart. No competition. He was like a little fly. The scriptures say like a wasp. He was like a little wasp. And Nrsingadev just tore him to pieces, effortlessly, with his nails. But then that same hand that tore Hiranyakashipu to pieces and that was source of great fear and death, when it touched Prahlad, it was softer than a lotus and filled his heart with ecstatic love. And when the Lord appeared as Lord Sri Ramchandra, with his bow and arrow, he destroyed Ravana. He pierced that arrow in his heart, and Ravana's 10 heads started vomiting blood. Very beautiful sight. And it's a higher taste to understand this beautiful sight. But Hanuman and all these monkeys, they were so happy seeing the 10 heads vomiting blood. They were just dancing in ecstasy, saying, Jai Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. And when Krishna appeared, when he lived in Vrindavan, he didn't use any weapons, because in his original form, he doesn't do that. Putana, he just and Agasura, he just grew. Keshi, he made his hand grow. And Vatsasura, he just picked him and threw him. Trinavarta, he just sat there. He didn't do anything. He just sat there, but he just became heavy like a mountain. So in this way, the Lord killed so many demons. But when he left Vrindavan, then he started using so many weapons, his Sudarshan Chakra. Shishupal. Head fell to the ground. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he understood in this age of Kali Yuga, he's coming to give Srimati Radharani's love freely to everyone. and to destroy the demoniac tendencies in everyone's hearts. Not to kill people's bodies like previous incarnations and give them liberation, but to destroy the demoniac tendencies in people's hearts with the supreme, most powerful of all weapons, the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And through chanting Hare Krishna Mantra, we can destroy all the evil tendencies within us. But at the same time, in order to continue chanting, and in order to avoid offenses while we're chanting, and in order to not be like the elephant that takes his bath in the lake or in the river and then comes out and rolls in the ground. You don't have so many elephants here in Bombay, but you have many buffaloes. And they do the same thing. Have you seen? I have seen. I'm always looking for these confirmations. The other day we were driving and we saw a buffalo. He was freshly, completely covered with mud. And he was very happy. He was smiling. And I could see the other buffaloes had some mud, but not so thoroughly coated. And he was looking at them like, ha ha, I am better than you. In this way, there's always competition amongst various species of life. So they come, they get nicely clean in a fresh water, and then they just roll in the mud, roll in the dirt. So similarly, when we are chanting the holy names of the Lord, and then if we act according to our lower tendencies, it counteracts the effects of our spiritual opportunity for progress. So therefore, it is very essential that we read such wonderful books that Srila Prabhupada has given us every day. And regularly we come to discourses. Every Sunday we have these nice classes at Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple. And every morning Srimad Bhagavatam class at 7:45. It is very important that we come and hear and read to fortify our intelligence so that we will always know how to properly live and how to properly utilize this weapon of the holy name that Krishna has given us to bring light into our own lives and to give light into the hearts of others. And the most important principle for chanting the holy names has been revealed in that beautiful story of Jiva Goswami. Trinadapi sunichena tadorapi sahishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadarati. In that narration of Jiva Goswami we find perfect humility. Although he was humbler than a blade of grass, he was willing to be bold, stand up and fight for truth. Fight for justice. Fight for Krishna. But with absolutely no pride in his heart. Simply as the humble servant of the servant of the servant. Through the lives of these great personalities, the conclusion of the truth of Bhagavad Gita is revealed to all of us. There are so many commentaries of Bhagavad Gita. and so many interpretations, explanations, speculations, concoctions, distortions, everywhere. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that the real truth of the scriptures is revealed by the character and the lives of those great Vaishnav devotees who have surrendered to the lotus feet of the Lord. The conclusions of the scriptures you will not find by reading the scriptures. They are there, but you will not see them. You will see them in the life of those devotees who have surrendered to the Lord. And through their life and through their words, you will be able to understand what is the essence of the Holy Scriptures, Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. Not through word jugglery, not through scholarship, but through sincere devotion. Jiva Goswami, he wrote over 200,000 Sanskrit slokas. Can you imagine how much that is? The whole Srimad Bhagavatam is 18,000 slokas. The whole Bhagavad Gita is approximately 700 slokas. He had written over 200,000 Sanskrit slokas in his many books. That's practically as much or more than all the Puranas. Such an empowered soul. And in his books he has established the highest truths on the basis of logic, on the basis of realization, and on the basis of scriptural evidence. And yet, see the character of this person. See why he is empowered to be such a scholar. If you read his books, or the books of those like Srila Prabhupada that are inspired by his writings, you will go back to the spiritual world. Because he didn't write simply out of his scholarship. His scholarship was used as a tool, but his heart was that of the most humble, sincere, menial servant of the servant of the servant of the Lord, who simply wanted to live out of compassion and love for the benefit of other living beings and for the pleasure of Krishna. So let us follow this line. And in whatever occupation, whatever ashram we may be in our life, let us keep our focus always that whatever we do, whatever we speak, should be pleasing to Krishna, should be pleasing to his devotees, and should be for the benefit of ourselves and the benefit of all others. And if we are all conscientious in this way, if we are all respectful in this way, then gradually spontaneous love of Krishna will come into our hearts. Srila Prabhupada said the safest place in this entire material existence is where the devotees are together with their arms raised, loudly chanting the holy name. Because when the kirtan is so loud, even if you feel like blaspheming another devotee, no one will hear you. so you won't even try. The kirtan is just so loud and so high that all you can do is, your mouth is simply praising the holy name, and the functions of every limb of your body are only glorifying the holy name through dancing. So what harm can you do? What offense can you make? You can only become purified. So in this way, this loud chanting of kirtan is the safest place in all the world. So we should take shelter of the congregational chanting of the holy names. It is our refuge. And we should live our life in such a way that we are always conscious of being the servant of Krishna. Thank you very much. So at this time we will have the kirtan of the chanting of the holy names of the Lord.